I'm Laura Kanoy. Thanks for listening to The Exchange, and thanks for supporting The Exchange. Membership contributions of all sizes make up about 40% of our annual funding at NHPR. Your sustaining membership donation of just $5 or $10 a month helps us produce this hour-long discussion. Become a sustainer today by clicking on the support link at the top of the page.
Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today, New Hampshire Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas, has been in budget-cutting mode from day one on the job. Tumpas took over the state's largest agency in 2008 just as the economy was slowing down and requests for social services were on the rise. It's meant that every year Tumpas has had to try to do more with less, and sometimes it's worked and sometimes it hasn't. In fact, his department faces two major lawsuits over how it's handled both mental health care and payments to hospitals for uncompensated care for the uninsured. But now Tumpas may be seeing a bit of light at the end of his long tunnel. Governor Maggie Hassan's budget would restore funds to various health programs, especially mental health. Still, when it comes to New Hampshire's budget, it takes three to tango. The governor will have to alter her vision as she negotiates with budget writers in the House and Senate. Also, the major revenue source she's counting on to help fund her priorities, a new casino, is far from a sure bet. Today in The Exchange, we'll talk about this with Commissioner Tumpas and the other huge task before him, his department's involvement in the Affordable Care Act, to be fully implemented just 9 months from now. Join us with your thoughts for Commissioner Tumpas. What do you think his priorities should be in the coming year? What concerns do you have about the way his department has handled health and social services? And what are you going to be looking out for as HHS and the state put the Affordable Care Act into place? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. And Commissioner Tumpas, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and let's start right off with the Affordable Care Act. Obamacare, as even the president himself calls it. How significant is this for New Hampshire overall, Commissioner Tumpas?
This is a huge program. I think it represents a huge opportunity for the state. There are a number of different provisions. The one that I'll probably focus in on is on the area of Medicaid expansion. But there are a couple of key components to this. The first is the individual mandate that is really the insurance department is really front and center in terms of that. But that doesn't – we at the department are working very closely with the insurance department because we need to make sure that anybody who does apply for Medicaid, and if they're not eligible for Medicaid, we need to be able to send that information and that individual over to one of the exchange, the marketplace. Again, the federal government will be running that for the state of New Hampshire and we'll be working in conjunction with them. The other major element of the Affordable Care Act is on the Medicaid expansion, which seeks to increase the number of people who would be covered and therefore reduce the number of uninsured and bringing that up to the level of effectively 138% of the federal poverty level, roughly $14,000 a year for an individual. And that would add roughly We estimate around 58,000 people would become Medicaid eligible for the first 3 years.
Who are not right now. They don't get
not,
Medicaid right
they,
now.
They are not right now. Indeed, the population that really is being targeted here, able-bodied adults, they're not pregnant. They don't have any other type of disability and so forth. They're simply not eligible for Medicaid, no matter what their income is. This seeks to add that. These people are not new to the system. They're already in the system. But now it allows us to be able to, for the first 3 years, according to the law, the 100% of their cost would be covered by the federal government. And in the subsequent years, it would go down to about 10% state, 90% federal by the year 2020.
Just backing up a little bit, Commissioner Tumpas, for the uninitiated, again, Medicaid is the partnership between the federal and state governments. It covers low-income people, children, pregnant women, extremely low-income folks, and it's a measure of health insurance for those people.
Medicaid is an insurance product. It covers low-income pregnant women and children. It covers the folks with a disability, whether it's a physical or developmental disability, those with mental illness, as well as the elderly. And those are the four broad components in terms of the populations that we serve. Medicaid in each one of those particular areas is either a relatively small player in terms of the amount of dollars that what it means in terms of that particular system, or is a very significant one. So, for example, in the area of elderly and in the disabled populations, Medicaid represents a significant amount of the resources that are being used by agencies in the state in order to deal with that. Whereas in the area of medical care, specifically in terms of the revenues that go into the hospitals, it's significant, but it's somewhere in the 7 to 10% range, as opposed to the 80 to 90% range in some of those other programs.
And as I understand, it's one of the biggest programs in the whole state government, if not the biggest, right?
Medicaid is generally, and not just in New Hampshire but across the country, is generally considered the second largest program. We're roughly 27% of the state's budget.
Wow, it's a lot.
Yes, yeah, but the most expensive program, if you will, is aid education.
All right. Well,
It is in our state.
I want to invite our listeners to join us, and then I have a couple more questions about this expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. It's a big issue, as you said, Commissioner Tumpas, bringing in 58,000 approximately more Granite Staters under this program. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the Exchange, we're taking your questions and comments for Nick Tumpas. He's Commissioner of New Hampshire's Department of Health and Human Services. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. So 58,000 approximately more people. Do we have enough doctors and nurses in the state to take care of all these new folks who will all of a sudden be covered?
Well, again, the people who are that we're talking about are not people that are going to be new to the system. They're already using the resources of the healthcare system in the state of New Hampshire. But unfortunately, what they do is they're going into the emergency rooms and other areas where we believe a more planned approach in terms of dealing with their care would be more appropriate. And that's where the managed care comes in. I know you want to talk about that in a few minutes.
But preventative care. So you're saying they're already there.
They're already there. But the whole idea here is now that If we can bring them in, because a lot of times people without insurance or without any type of coverage often delay not taking care of it. I feel fine. I'm not going to go through any type of test, only to find out that something is wrong with them. And then when they finally do have to go into the emergency room or some other place, it's going to cost far more than if you had dealt with it earlier on. And that's where the promise in terms of having somebody covered to have a primary care physician and so forth. There is an issue. There will be an issue in terms of the adequacy of the resources. We're working on that now. But the fact of the matter is that having people with a planned way in which to be able to receive their services and their care under some sort of a product would be beneficial.
So you are looking at this idea, though, of health provider shortages. I mean, I was reading something on Kaiser Health News this morning, for example, that talked about efforts that other states are making, trying to expand their clinics, trying to expand the number of docs that are available for primary care, because they're seeing many thousands more coming into the system, and they're going, great to have people covered, but whoa, you know, we're already really busy. I know some doctors who won't, they haven't taken new patients for years. They're already full to capacity. So I just wonder how you're going to handle 60,000 new people.
That would probably be a topic for an entire program. But I think one of the key things that we need to focus on right now is really with this gives us an opportunity to really focus on overall the health of the individual and the health of the population by emphasizing the prevention, the wellness, and things of that nature, so that you mitigate the need for the more services down the road by really focusing in on those, again, early intervention, prevention, and so forth. There's a lot of education and things that need to be done in that particular area to essentially improve the health of the population, as opposed to waiting until somebody is just so sick, and then that's a losing proposition. We're never going to be able to catch catch the wave on that. We're always going to be behind the eight ball on that.
All right, let's take some calls, Commissioner Tumpas, and then I have a lot more questions for you. Again, the number here in the exchange for you to join us with Commissioner Nick Tumpas of Health and Human Services is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Carol's calling in from Grantham. Hi, Carol. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you. The question I have is, now with the new governor, is the state going to resume sending the money it receives from the federal government for Medicaid patients on to the hospitals that are treating them instead of keeping it for general fund purposes? I think Dartmouth-Hitchcock is in a terrible financial squeeze because of not getting that money, and I think we need to, you know, be fair and straightforward about how that money is used, and we haven't been for the last year or two.
Well, Carol, thanks for the call, and she's right. This is the subject of a major lawsuit against the department, Commissioner Tumpas.
Yes. What Carol is referring to is the disproportionate share hospital program, and in very simple terms, hospitals are assessed a provider tax called the Medicaid Enhancement Tax. They pay that money in, and what that does is provides a pool of dollars that the state can then use to be able to match with not Medicaid dollars, but their dollars from something called the disproportionate share hospital allocation at the federal level that is then used to be able to pay hospitals for the level of uncompensated care.
Meaning charity care, so to speak.
Care
that basically they pay for because the folks don't have insurance or any other way of paying.
That's correct. That's correct. And under a change that was made in the last legislature, only a portion of those dollars are being paid out to hospitals, specifically to a set of hospitals called the critical access hospitals, which tend to be your smaller hospitals. The other part of it is she's referring to in terms of Dartmouth, they're paying the tax, they're still incurring the uncompensated care that they provide, but now they're not getting any reimbursement for that.
Yeah, and there's a lawsuit over that.
And,
so
that's correct. But to her point, Governor Hassan's budget does contemplate adding dollars in again for what the Medicaid enhancement tax is going to be. She makes projections on that, and then also to basically say that a portion of those dollars, I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but a portion of those dollars will be used for the critical access hospitals as well as for the non-critical access hospitals.
Well, Carol, it's a big issue. Thank you for raising it. And we'll take more of your calls after a very short break. We're going to check in now with our March Fund Drive.
This is Keith Shields, executive producer for The Exchange, here with NHPR's news director, Sarah Ashworth, and it's the NHPR March Drive. You can support shows like The Exchange when you give us a call at 1-888-805-6477. NHPR members support the work of Laura Kanoy and The Exchange. 1-888-805-6477.
And the goal is to raise $2,000 by 10 o'clock. That's in the next 40 minutes. We want to raise $2,000. Meeting that goal will ensure that NHPR has the money needed to pay for a program like The Exchange in the months to come. Please call 1-888-805-6477 and help meet this ambitious goal. You can also give online at nhpr.org.
A great interview so far with Laura and HHS Commissioner Nick Tumpas. The Exchange provides you a direct connection between you, the Granite Stater, and our commissioners, our congresswomen, our senators, and our governor. Not only good, tough questions from Laura, but you get to talk to them directly with your questions and concerns and praise. And this is all due to listener support. Your past support allowed us to bring you this interview, and your future support will ensure that you can bring you other interviews with commissioners and government leaders down the road. 1-888-805-6477.
And we're down now to $1,800 to go in the next 38 minutes. Help us reach that goal. You can consider your support of NHPR to be kind of like a subscription, like magazines, newspapers, or cable. By selecting to pay your membership monthly, you can add NHPR to those other services that you've decided are worth a little bit something extra each month. And what you give to NHPR will probably be one of the smallest monthly payments you're making. And every little bit adds up for us here at NHPR. It helps break down the installments easy for you to pay each month, and we can count on your support every month. Make your pledge, make your sustaining membership pledge this morning by calling 1-888-805-6477, or you can go online, take 2 minutes, fill out some forms on nhpr.org.
And for a gift of $120, which breaks down to $10 a month as a sustainer, we'll thank you with the NHPR member card. Maybe you were a card carrier last year and enjoyed all the benefits thereof. Well, it does expire, so renew to get all those wonderful two-for-one deals at restaurants and cultural events again this year. As you probably know, if you've carried it before, that you get your money back pretty quickly with all those two-for-one deals. $120 goes a long way with the NHPR member card. So 1-888-805-6477, or learn more about it, go online at nhpr.org when you make a donation there.
And here's one more reason to make your pledge. This Monday morning, we have two great drawings. These are two big drawings to kick off the week. They're both happening today. One happens before the other, though, and if you want to be in both of them, you have to make a pledge this morning. The first drawing is for a year-long family pass to Ponima Green Family Golf Center in Amherst. The second drawing is for a two-night stay at Sunset Hill House in Sugar Hill, and that comes with a White Mountain Attractions Value Pass. So two great drawings today, but you'll only be entered in one of them if you make your pledge later this afternoon. So make it this morning. Make it during the exchange. Show your support now online at nhpr.org.
$1,800 to go in the next 38 minutes. You know, many listeners are choosing to support New Hampshire Public Radio by giving $1,000 or more. It's a great way to support the station. You become a Leadership Circle member. And especially during our membership campaign, the money you give will ensure that NHPR will always be here, not only for you, but for all of New Hampshire. So if you can give a gift of $1,000 or more, give us a call at 1-888-805-6477, but we will gladly accept any amount. You can make a contribution online as well at nhpr.org.
We are still looking to raise $1,800 in the next 37 minutes. You can help us meet this goal, help support the exchange. Let us know why you listen to Laura Kanoy's program every day. Let us know the kind of programming that you value when you make your pledge this morning. There are so many reasons to do it. We have many thank you gifts you can choose from. You'll be entered in those two great drawings. But most of all, you'll show your support for a program like The Exchange on NHPR. You can make your pledge right now. Go online. Fill out a couple of forms. Takes just 2 minutes at nhpr.org. And thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the Courier Museum of Art in Manchester, presenting Lethal Beauty, Samurai Weapons and Armor, featuring works by master craftsmen from the 13th to the 19th century, more at thecourier.org. And from Granite State Human Resource Conference, Tuesday, April 30th, at the Center of New Hampshire in Manchester. Information and registration online at gshrconference.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas is with us, and we invite you to join us with your questions and comments. What do you think his priorities should be in the coming year? What concerns do you have about how his department has approached health programs, social services here in the state? And as we talk about the Affordable Care Act, which is supposed to be fully in place in just 9 months, what do you think his department needs to keep in mind as it moves forward toward the ACA? 1-800-892-6477 is our number here in The Exchange for you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. You can send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Commissioner Tumpas, just before the break, we heard from someone who was worried that the state's hospitals had really gotten slammed in the last budget, that they were having to pay for, you know, all of that charity care that they do, that they're not getting reimbursed at all for that. We mentioned that there's a lawsuit ongoing. What are your hopes for settling this lawsuit, or is it going to go to trial? What do you think?
The The issue with respect to the lawsuit is in the hands of the court. My attorneys, which are the Attorney General's office, are working this on behalf of the state and the department. It would really be inappropriate for me to comment about the outcome of that. It really rests with the court. We've provided the information. We've got certain approvals from the federal government to be able to move forward, but ultimately it resides with the court, and it's really outside of my hands.
And I know you can't really say a whole lot, but here's one last question then about this. From what I understand, this lawsuit has prevented the state from moving into what's called Medicaid managed care. In other words, moving Medicaid from the traditional fee-for-service to a more efficient, supposedly, managed care model. You were supposed to realize $10, $15 million worth of savings from doing this, but from what I understand, you can't move forward because of this lawsuit. Is that right?
Well, there are a number of reasons why we can't move forward. The primary, first off, managed care is a more efficient system.
And most states do their Medicaid systems that way.
47 other states already do some portion of their Medicaid program under managed care. Some do it very well. Some do not. We have the opportunity here to basically learn from what others have done well as what others have not done well. The plan that was put forward by the legislature contemplated that we would achieve $15 million worth of, I call it, efficiencies by being more effective in terms of how we utilize the dollars through better care and coordination of care, especially for the most complex individuals that we serve. Right now, anybody who is receiving care, they may have multiple specialists. There's absolutely no coordination systemically with that. The other is that the system is based on largely a fee-for-service model, which means that basically it incents a lot of volume and it really doesn't get us to the type of quality or access indicators that we really desire, again, systemically looking at the whole area. I paint that broad picture. There's some that do very well. There's some that could do a whole lot better. So we want to be able to move forward on that. But the program was supposed to get started in July of a year ago. And right now there are a number of variables that prevent us from moving forward. But the primary part of it is that we have to have at least two of the three managed care organizations have to have a network of providers that is adequate to be able to cover all the services that we want that are part of the contract, and that needs to be done statewide. Right now, we don't have two of those organizations do not have the adequate network in order to do that. Hospitals are a key component of that. Mental health centers are a key component of that. There are a number of other agencies and services that are out there that are also a component of that. Once we have that, once two of those organizations have demonstrated that to us, then there's a roughly 120-day period leading up to the implementation of the care management program.
All right. I got another question for you on that, but I want to share you with our listeners, Commissioner Tumpas. So let's go back to our callers. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Emails are welcome, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. And Kathy's waiting in Danville. Hey, Kathy, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air with Commissioner Tumpas.
Thank you. I'm going to maybe offer something else that we could look at as far as health care costs are concerned. And it's that we have no idea when we're receiving health care what the cost of it's going to be. Right now, I am uninsured and I needed to end up in the emergency room. And I want to be able to decide what the doctor can or could not do based on what my finances are. But nobody knows how much anything costs. So I'm wondering if there isn't some way that we could be more responsible consumers of healthcare by understanding the impact financially of what the care is going to cost us. I don't want support from the state. I would like to be able to handle that myself if possible.
You know, Kathy, can I ask you a quick question, if you don't mind? You said you're uninsured. Can you tell us why is that? Are you unemployed, or does your employer not offer insurance, or how come?
I'm unemployed.
You're unemployed, yeah.
Yes.
And would you be able to get Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act? Would your income be low enough to get Medicaid, get covered that way?
No.
No.
No, my income is not considered low enough because at this point I'm on Social Security.
Yeah.
But I'm 62, so so I'm not on Medicare.
Right. Yep, you're in that wonderful window, aren't you?
Right, yeah. Right. And no one's hiring me because I think, you know, they look at the age. So I'm now self-responsible, and I'm fine with that, but I want to know what I'm spending on it. The ambulance cost over $1,300.
Wow.
If I had known that, I would have had somebody drive me.
Well, Kathy, great points. Two points, actually, that come up from this call. But can you address the one that she started off with, Commissioner Tumpas, that consumers just, you know, they're sort of adrift in the system. They don't know how much stuff costs. So when the doctor says, well, I think we should do such and such, they say, okay.
Yeah, they're clearly what Kathy is talking about is greater transparency in terms of what the costs are. There are several websites that are out there in terms of being able to provide some people with that, but it really is a conversation that she needs to have with her providers and so forth in terms of what the costs are.
Although sometimes they don't know.
No, they well, you know? Again, this is where any one of these issues, Laura, is a topic for a full program and then some with people who are far more smarter about this than I am, but. But Kathy raises her issue is really symptomatic of the broader issue and the fact that she needs care and she needs to have certain things done. But because now she's in the position of having to pay for some of that, nobody can give her a straight answer in terms of how much it's really going to cost.
In terms of her getting coverage, she's in that unfortunate zone, you know, not quite old enough to get Medicare, which is the program for older Americans, but uninsured, and not quite poor enough to qualify for Medicaid. So would she go to the exchanges,
new exchanges that are going to be set up? Depending upon what her circumstance would be, she would apply. And again, it is an individual mandate and that she would need to apply.
She has to.
Yes. But if she's not eligible for Medicaid, then she can then move to going to the exchange, and then she has a range of different options that she would have within the exchange based on the type of, whatever her circumstance would be. So she has the choices and has a range of different plans that she would be able to choose from within that exchange. And depending again what her circumstances, she would get some sort of a subsidy for that.
And again, your department is less involved in setting up these exchanges. That's more the insurance department.
That's correct.
Kathy, good luck to you. Thank you for calling in. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Commissioner Tumpas, before we go back to our listeners, I did want to ask you something about something that has gotten a huge amount of attention lately, and that's New Hampshire's mental health system. This may seem like a dumb question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Why do you think New Hampshire's mental health system has gone from one that 20 years ago was nationally praised to one today that is nationally criticized, is even the subject of a federal lawsuit? Is this just about the money, Commissioner Tumpas, or is there something else going on there as well?
Clearly, the funding of the system is something that is very, very important on this. It isn't overnight that we're in this situation. I will reference back to when I became the commissioner back in 2007. One of the first things that we did was really pull together a group of people to acknowledge that we had a problem because we had seen a degradation in community resources. Mental health is not just a state hospital, not just community mental health centers. It takes a wide range of components in order to basically have an effective system. You start pulling things out of that system, the system goes out of balance, and that's the problem.
So it's like a balanced ecosystem. You pull
a system is called a system that has to operate properly, has a number of different components. You start pulling things out of that, you're going to have – it's going to compensate for that. And in our case right now, as you've seen in the front page of the Monitor over yesterday and this morning, really about waiting lists at the New Hampshire Hospital as well as others, which is completely unacceptable. There's no question it's unacceptable. What we did was we recognized that a number of years ago. We pulled together a group of people and came up with a 10-year plan in order to basically restore the system.
In 2008. I remember you and I talked about that.
We did. And And that is something that we continue to work on. And indeed, one of the priorities that we had when we went to work with Governor Hassan in terms of constructing the budget was to make sure that we put dollars in there in order to basically reverse that. Now, Governor Hassan had said in her inaugural speech as well as in her budget saying some of the things that you can't turn around all this overnight. And so it's just a matter of identifying those high impact areas, which is what we've done, and have that now into Governor Hassan's budget in order to basically start to reverse some of the challenges that we're dealing with right now.
So is it all about money? Is there something else going on? Do we see more people with mental illness? Do we see shifting attitudes about mental illness? Are we, you know, using too many drugs to treat it, not enough drugs? I mean, is there something else besides the money, or is that pretty much it?
The thing that it's a complicated area, but for purposes of our ability to basically treat people appropriately, it is a significant part about the money with that, because this is one of those areas that if you don't do things in the manner in which you really can and should, it's going to have impacts elsewhere.
Bigger ripple effects than you imagine.
Huge impacts. It impacts the school system. It impacts the correction system, both at the state level as well at the county level. It impacts the safety system in terms of the frontline state troopers and law enforcement in the communities. It impacts, obviously, the Department of Justice in terms of now where a significant amount of resources are being spent right now in order to deal with a lawsuit. When we acknowledge that we had a problem to begin with and we took steps in order to basically do that, now I'm having to spend resources to fight a lawsuit that says
instead of improving the system,
instead of using those dollars in order to be able to improve the system. So what we had the opportunity with Governor Hassan to identify a handful of things at a systemic level. Again, additional bed capacity out in the community, additional housing supports out in the community, additional peer supports. So if somebody is recovering from mental illness, they can be able to work with others. Assertive community treatment teams, which are a way in which to be able to deal with somebody in the community and prevent them from going into the emergency rooms of the hospitals. That's a significant issue now.
The hospitals are really, really upset about it, as we've heard. Their ERs are supposed to be for people who, you know, have broken legs.
It is a significant. I'm not going to sit here and tell anybody that this type of a situation is acceptable, and it's something that we condone. We have resources that were provided to us. I've tried to do the best that we can with those particular resources, but now we have it reached a point where even in this current fiscal year, where I don't have the budget in terms of doing certain things, I went to the legislature and to the governor and said, I am going to take dollars out of my budget right now in terms of being able to put an additional 12 beds into the New Hampshire hospital, which were taken away back a couple of years ago. It certainly isn't a long-term fix. It's not going to change the system, but it is a component of the system that we need to repair right now.
Okay, and I've got one more question on this, but I need to go to a short break. But coming out, one more question on mental health and where you find the money to do all these things. But we have to take a quick break now, Commissioner Tumpas, and we're going to check in with our March Fund Drive.
And hearing Laura Kanoy and all the great guests that come on The Exchange is one of the reasons you value New Hampshire Public Radio. Help us keep The Exchange coming your way by giving to NHPR now during the March Fund Drive. And you can do that online at nhpr.org or give us a call at 1-888-805-6477. I'm Keith Shields, the executive producer of the show you're just listening to, along with NHPR's news director, Sarah Ashworth.
Good morning. We have $800 left to raise in the next 21 minutes to stay on track this hour by calling 1-888-805-6477. You help us pay for programs like The Exchange here on NHPR. Online contributions, they count as well towards the goal. That's easy to make your contribution online at nhpr.org, and it truly does make a difference. Go on to nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-888-805-6477. 805-6477.
You know, when elected officials, government leaders, candidates come on the exchange, they know that this isn't going to be a photo op. Laura's job is to ask them the right questions, the tough questions, but fair questions, and to make sure that you, the listener, have the opportunity to ask the questions you want answered to as well. Sometimes you bring new perspectives to things that we didn't even thought about in our editorial meetings. So it's important to hear a show that doesn't shy away from the complex issues or the uncomfortable questions. And we can do that because we are member-supported and an independent service. So support it by calling 1-888-805-6477.
There are thousands of websites, dozens of radio stations, dozens of TV stations. They're all competing for your attention every day. But of all those choices, you've chosen NHPR. You choose us for NPR News. You choose us for intelligent discussion programs like the one you're listening to right now. You choose us for these programs, and NHPR is worthy of that attention. We believe it, and I know you do too. That makes us worthy of your support. We're asking you to call in and make a pledge now. Call 1-888-805-6477.
19 minutes to go to raise that additional $800 to stay on track. If you supported New Hampshire Public Radio in the past, that's wonderful. Maybe it's time to re-up. And if it's been about a year since your last contribution, your member card is probably about to expire. But when you renew your membership, we'll send you a new card, and it entitles you to all the discounts at the restaurants and lodgings and cultural attractions around New Hampshire. It's yours for $10 a month donation when we set you up as a sustainer. 1-888-805-6477, or you can learn more about the member card online at nhpr.org.
And here is one more reason to make your pledge this morning. When you do, you'll be entered into two great drawings that are happening on this Monday. We're giving away a year-long family pass to Ponema Green Family Golf Center in Amherst. And then our second drawing later today is for a two-night stay at a bed and breakfast in Sugar Hill. It's called Sunset Hill House. You'll also get this White Mountain Attractions Value Pass. It's a pass for attractions like the Cog Railway and the Flume. All you can be entered in both of those drawings when you make a pledge this morning, but if you wait until later, you're only going to be entered into one of them. So don't put it off. Make a pledge at nhpr.org.
Now only $700 to go in the next 17 minutes. We're getting close to that goal. I know we can do it. Giving just takes 2 minutes of your time. We need your name and contact information, which we always keep private, and you can become a sustaining member using your Visa, your MasterCard, American Express, or Discover. Or you can make a one-time gift as well. So please give now whichever way you choose before the day slips away. Help us make this goal. We're getting so close. 1-888-805-6477, or make a donation online at nhpr.org.
If making a contribution to NHPR is on your to-do list, then please do it now by becoming a member. It really is quite easy. It takes just 2 minutes, and you can help us reach this goal this morning. We want to raise $700 in the next 18 minutes. We can so easily do that. I should say so easily, only with the help of people like you, listeners like you, who call in and contribute or go online to nhpr.org. And thank you.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling. For any plumbing, heating, cooling, or drain problem, offering annual tune-ups and efficient heating systems, online at justcallheritage.com. And from the Woodstock Inn Station and Brewery, announcing the opening of its new 30-barrel brewery and its new 160-seat function room. Information at woodstockinnh.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, the trend of downshifting costs from state government to the cities and towns. Email us your questions and comments before the program at nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, Commissioner Nick Tumpas discusses the challenges before his department, the Department of Health and Human Services, from the Affordable Care Act to Medicaid Managed Care. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange at nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. And Commissioner Tumpas, before we go back to our listeners, just before the break, you were talking about your frustration with cuts in the mental health system, your hopes that some of those cuts will be restored so that the system will be better balanced, as you put it. One last question for you. The funding that the governor is counting on to help her fund priorities like mental health is far from certain. $80 million in license fees from a new casino. Now, there are other sources of money as well, but this is a big chunk. What happens, Commissioner Tumpas, if those monies don't come through, if the House says no way, no casino?
Well, you said it in your opening remarks that we're early on in the budget process. And so we've just finished the first round of discussions with the House with respect to the budget. And the first part of it was for them to understand what it is that we have within the governor's budget, as well as the again, our ask and so forth. So we spent a fair amount of time over the past couple of weeks being able to go through that. It is a policy level decision in terms of what they will do, where they choose to put the resources and so forth. It's our responsibility to go back to them saying, if we indicated here we need $28 million in order to basically do this in the mental health system, if we get something other than that,
here's substantially, what we can't do.
Here is what the implications of that are going to be. That's our responsibility, is to go back and provide the policymakers, the legislators, with the information that they're going to need so that they can make an informed decision. And then they will make that decision. And then the whole thing about this whole process is that the further on in the process you go, the more certain some of the information comes in, whether it's revenues or estimates of revenues and so forth. It'll then go into the Senate in the April timeframe, I believe. So it really, what our responsibility is, will be, we'll say, this is what we need, this is why we need it, and this is what the impacts will be. But if we don't get some or all of that, then here are what the implications are going to be if you don't do that. Where are the costs going to shift? How many people are going to be impacted? What's going to happen elsewhere within the system? Because, again, it's a complex system, and if you start pulling things out of it, it's going to compensate in ways that you may not want to have it compensate.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email that came in from Jane in Exeter. DHHS programs and budget cover so many critical areas. What's the current status and possible future for children's services and for substance abuse? Jane, thank you for that email, especially, boy, I don't know where to start. I mean, children's services, absolutely. Substance abuse, Commissioner Tumpas, every time we do a program on substance abuse, we get just agonized calls from parents whose kids can't get substance abuse help, and they just see the kids slipping away.
It is, unfortunately, in virtually every area that we serve, whether you're talking about children and families, a lot of times some of the distress within a family environment, either a root cause or a significant contributor to that is an underlying substance abuse issue on the part of a parent or somebody who has access to the children. Clearly, it is an issue with respect to the mental health that we were just talking about. A number of times people beginning to feel a problem coming on, they will self-medicate,
right,
and use some type of substance in order to be able to do that. So we have to have also a balance in terms of looking at not just treatment services, but we also need to put a significant emphasis on the prevention of those as well.
And to answer her question, you can't really say right now this early in the budget cycle.
It is early in the budget cycle. Again, there's been a fair amount of discussion in the what's called the Division III, working with the House for them to understand what the budget for substance abuse services are about. There's a governor's commission that I serve on as well, that has clearly indicated what the implications would be for these services, because they cut across everything.
Yeah, I think
it does cut across everything.
I think the Commissioner of Corrections once said that, you know, I don't know, can't remember what the exact number was, but it was like 70-80% of the people within his prison system have some sort of substance abuse problem. It's huge.
It is a clear area, and then there are other things. If you'll talk to the Attorney General's office at some point, you'll also see that the issue of substance abuse, and especially now with the abuse of prescription drugs, is a rampant issue right now.
Let's take a call from Frank in Rye Beach. Hi, Frank. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air with Commissioner Tumpas.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
The thought I have is I've read that the outcomes for patients in Medicaid is very poor. And I've also read that that if you arrange your Obamacare exchange system, Medicare system in a certain way, I think it's Arkansas has done that, that you can reduce or you don't have to take in all those patients into Medicare.
You mean Medicaid, Frank, right?
I mean Medicaid. The exchanges and get federal subsidies and so on and so forth, depending on their needs. And they're in private plans, which have much better health outcomes. And that funding isn't temporary. The Medicaid funding is only for, what, 3 years?
Well, but then they cover, feds will cover 90% after 3 years.
Well, yes, but
supposedly. Yeah, there's some skepticism about that.
Yeah.
We've heard that song before, right?
Yeah, and the finances of the country aren't that strong. So,
well, yeah, and that's a great second point, actually, Commissioner Tumpas. We've heard others say this. Republicans in the Senate do say they're concerned that the feds promise they'll fund Medicaid 100% and then 90%. But will they really, given what we've seen with other federal programs?
I first want to touch base on something that Frank said, that the outcomes for Medicaid are poor. I would take strong disagreement with that.
Yeah.
Our outcomes, especially for our children's services and so forth, are really right at the top of the list. I think we do a pretty fair job in terms of the dollars that we spend in the Medicaid program and the outcomes that we achieve.
Well, also you have to look at the population. People on Medicaid are struggling already.
Well, again, the thing about Medicaid is that we serve on average 137,000 people a month in the Medicaid program. 80% of those, roughly 80% of those, are low income women and children. They are the least expensive of the populations that we serve, and those are the areas that we have the highest level of outcomes in terms of what it is that we're able to achieve with those individuals. The roughly 30% of the population are the elderly, the disabled, and the mentally ill that consume probably close to 70% of the dollars that we spend in the Medicaid program.
So it depends on who you're looking at when you talk about outcomes.
You have to look at Medicaid is not just a monolith. You have to look at the components within it. With respect to what he brings up about
should we do this? Will the feds really pick up the tab?
Will the feds pick up the tab? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. But the fact of the matter is that again, when I look at the whole Affordable Care Act, and I understand it is a massive change. It's a very significant change in terms of moving forward. But I would challenge anybody to tell me that the status quo is better, because it's not. And so I think what the act does is it gives us the opportunity to begin to make the changes. Because in order to change our systems, you have to look at basically three components: how it's financed, how we pay for services. That's where the managed care component will come in, and how it's delivered, how the services are delivered. And the Affordable Care Act does provide a number of different components. Dartmouth is one of the thought leaders in this whole area around accountable care organizations. There are some constructs that we have within the managed care program once we stand it up that we want to be able to use as a way in which to be able to change both how we pay for and how we deliver the services.
Speaking of the federal budget, one last quick question for you, Commissioner Tumpas, and then we have to close out. A lot of talk in the last couple of weeks about federal budget cuts, sequestration, the impact on New Hampshire. How big a deal is this for your department, this whole across-the-board cuts due to sequestration?
Well, it is a challenge, and right now we've come up with some estimates of somewhere in the vicinity of $7 million of potential impacts.
$7 million doesn't sound like that much.
It doesn't until you start to take a look at where those dollars are going and what percentage that represents of some of the grants that we're receiving from the federal government. The biggest issue that we're facing right now, and Governor Hassan did convene a group of department heads last week in order to be able to talk about this, was one of the biggest issues that we face right now is just a shocking lack of details from the federal government. We just don't know what – in terms of even the people who are responsible for the grants, they're saying, well, we'll be in touch with you
Yeah, I don't think they know yet.
I don't, again, perhaps they don't know, but for the fact of the matter is that we need to be planning for. I think it's March 27th that some of the decisions need to be made. I'd also point out that the other thing about sequestration is just this is just not a 1 year thing. If they don't come up with something like this, it's going to go on over the next 10 years as well.
All right. Well, Commissioner Tumpas, I have to cut it off there. Thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Laura.
That's Nick Tumpas, Commissioner for New Hampshire's Department of Health and Human Services. This is The Exchange on NHPR. Let's check back in very quickly with our March Fund Drive.
And hearing The Exchange is one of the reasons you value NHPR. Help us keep The Exchange coming your way by giving to NHPR now during the March Fund Drive. You can do that online at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477. Good Monday morning. I'm Sarah Ashworth here with the executive producer of The Exchange, Keith Shields.
And we have about $700 to go that we want to raise in the next 5 minutes to stay on track to meet our overall goal and to get back to regular programming as soon as possible. I know for a fact that there are a lot of Exchange fans out there listening right now. Support this show by giving us a call right now at 1-888-805-6477. Get that remaining $700 in the next 5 minutes to make our goal. You can also make a donation at nhpr.org.
And we're going to get back to our programming very shortly. Coming up next, of course, is the Diane Rehm Show. Today on our program, she's taking a closer look at the U.S. economy. We hear so many differing stories, things about sequestration's impact. Then we hear about lower unemployment numbers. It's hard to get a firm grasp on just how well the economy is doing. Diane and her guests are going to try to get at that question in the next hour. It's the kind of programming that helps you be a better informed citizen, and it's why you listen to NHPR, and it's why we're asking you to support a program like The Exchange or The Diane Rehm Show. You can do that by making a pledge at nhpr.org.
Like other strong nonprofit organizations in our state, NHPR is funded with voluntary contributions, and it ranges from a few dollars to a few thousand dollars. We're asking you to choose the amount that fits your budget and reflects the value that NHPR adds to your life, whether it's $5 a month, $15 a month, $100 a month on the Sustainer Plan. It will maintain that this trusted and independent source for news and information stays now and always. 1-888-805-6477. We can set up that sustaining membership at nhpr.org.
And if you set up a sustaining membership at the $10 per month level, or you give a one-time gift of $120, we'll send you the NHPR member card. This thing, it looks like a credit card. You can carry it around, use it at restaurants. There are a lot of different cultural institutions around New England. It's not just New Hampshire. There are places in Massachusetts and Maine and Vermont as well. You'll get discounts like 2-for-1s. And better yet, you're going to be able to show your support of a station like NHPR. That's yours with a pledge of $120 today. You can make it at nhpr.org.
Only $500 to go now in the next 2 minutes to make our goal. And if you call in before noontime today, it's only 2 hours now, you'll be entered into a great drawing, a year-long family pass to the Panema Green Family Golf Center in Amherst. Also, we give away later on for the day the Sunset Hill House a drawing, and that comes with the White Mountains Attractions Value Pass. So call in right now to get into both drawings that we're giving away today.